It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee at Starbucks with a double latte skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville, now part of the Athletic Baseball Show, where you'll find great baseball talk all week long and all off-season long. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic, and I am joined once again by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN Radio. Whew! Doug Glanville. Doug, how are you, man? You know, somehow or other, it is the last Starkville of the year. And so, like, what happens in Starkville? Well, we close down the whole town of Starkville for the holidays. You would know about this. Do we turn out the street lights all over town? Does everybody just go vacation like in Maui? How does it work?
Well, Starkville becomes a gigantic beach. And everybody just throws a giant New Year's party. And then the next day it snows. And then you go skiing. So, because Starkville's got it like that. We cover all weather patterns. You can do anything and any day that you wish in Starkville.
See. Wow. And what was that old Tina Fey line? I want to go to there. Let's do that. it's our town. We're already there. Look, since it's our last show of the year, we wanted to have some fun. Looking back at 2022, so here's what we're going to do. We're inviting in our friends from other towns in Athletic Baseball Show America. We've got Andy McCullough and Eno Saris joining us. Boys, happy holidays and welcome back to Starkville.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having us.
The honor and the pleasure is ours. Guys, this was one wild year in baseball. You don't need me to tell you that, but here's the deal. It's up to us to capture the wildness of 2022. I think we can do that. You guys agree?
Oh, yeah. No doubt. It was wild. It was wacky. It was everything.
Okay, I was hoping you'd agree. All right, so look, since we just named that Aaron Judge guy as the Athletic Sports Person of the Year, why don't we start with him? I'll tell you what, I'll start. I know this will shock you. I do have a few Aaron Judge facts I can run past you guys. You ready? Mm-hmm. He homered against 56 different pitchers this year in 16 different parks against 19 different teams. Every inning, 1 through 10, he hit a homer. Hit 13 home runs as a really tall leadoff guy. He hit two home runs leading off a game, tallest man ever to do that. He led his league in home runs by 20. He led the league in runs scored by 30. He led the league in total bases by 82. He led the league in OPS by 92 points. And I actually think this might be my favorite of all of them. You know, no member of the Detroit Tigers hit 18 home runs this whole year. And Aaron Judge hit 18 before we got to Memorial Day. So it's pretty crazy to think back on this happening in real life. I'm sure you have some thoughts. Doug, why don't we start with you? Aaron Judge, your thoughts.
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, because the real cherry on top was the contract win, right? It's like, and so you know, you think about betting on yourself, and I just remember going into free agency, and I wasn't going exactly off of my best foot, and just the uncertainty about where you're going to go, the stress of just not knowing when it's going to end, and it's not an easy process, let alone the fact that you're going into the season saying, hope I'm staying healthy here. Like, you want to put yourself in like a hermetically sealed case or something because you're so worried about like, oh, if I got hurt or sprained my ankle. And Judge, you know, delivered on that. And he's a guy that's had injury history. You kind of expected him to be out a little bit. And every time I was researching for some game he was playing in, I couldn't find any holes in the stats to figure out like, well, where is this guy's weakness exactly? Like, and you know, I remember talking to Alex Cora at one point. He was like, if you miss anywhere in his zone, it's over. Like, I haven't seen him miss all season. Like, he just had that kind of season. And you know, as a player, when you're just in quote the zone, it's hard to do over 2 weeks, 10 days, let alone an entire season. And when you're a power hitter that can hit for average, get on base, and really be a great defender, by the way, as well. You know, you have a season for the ages. So I recognize that had you not been in the era of Shohei Ohtani, it would be just like Judge would just be standing on some island somewhere. But it was that fun to watch him, and he was so consistent. But the cool and calm which he did it, and then in the end, just to be able to say, well, I could leave, but you're going to pay me more to stay. And that ultimate bet on yourself was just sort of what iced everything on his cake.
Yeah, he only got $150 million out of that bet on himself. So that, he might have had a better offseason than season. You know, you have any thoughts about Aaron Judge's year?
Well, it also really stands in opposition to some trends in the game. We had a deadened ball this year. You know, this was supposed to be a year where, and it was for everybody else, where homers were down. And, right. You know, we particularly saw it on opposite field versus pulled homers. So pulled homers were down 15%, but opposite field homers were down 30%. So opposite field homers are down twice as much as pulled homers because the deadened ball, you know, it's that last foot or two, it stole those homers. It didn't matter for Judge. You know, like he'll still hit 16 homers to the opposite field. He had a slugging percentage over 1,000 to the opposite field. The third time he's done that in his career. He was 190% better than league average to the opposite field. So, you know, it was, you know, the whole league is like, what are we going to do? Tommy Pham and JD Martinez are out here having conversations about, you know, can we hit the ball the opposite way anymore? Like, is that even a thing we can do anymore with the ball the way it is? And Judge is like, no, I can still hit it the opposite way.
Yeah. I remember in another time we used to talk about how nobody ever talked about how the ball was juiced when Pedro pitched. This is the opposite. Nobody talked about how the ball was dead when Aaron Judge was up. Andy, what struck you about Aaron Judge's year? You get to see a lot of it up close.
Yeah, I mean, I think Aaron Boone talked about this a lot, just sort of how Judge, if you compare it to his era, as you guys mentioned, right? Like, he really is an outlier. I think I looked this up today, like, the league slugging average this year was 395, and he slugged 686, right? He had a 211 OPS plus, which means he's essentially twice as effective as a, you know, normal player. I think he was, like, the first, like, 11-win player in WAR, you know, since Barry Bonds, right? But I also think, you know, the point you made, Jason, about, like, his offseason might have been better than his season. Like, this guy conducted as effective a one-year platform campaign on field and off as you possibly can. I mean, one, like, he goes out and hits 62 home runs, which, like, yeah, was going to net him some more money. And then his ability to extract that contract from the Yankees and sort of all the little breadcrumbs along the way, you know, the staged video in San Francisco. Oh, I'm just here to see some family, you know, the late night.
I love that, by the way.
The mysterious flight to meet with the Padres and, you know, like, and this idea that they would somehow get $400 million out of Peter Seidler. All of it, you know, culminating in him getting this, I think it was 9-360, an AAV record for position players, you know, $40 million a year, right? Like, at the start of the year, when he got offered, I think it was 7-213, right? Like, I know, looking at that deal, talking to executives, the sort of general consensus was like, yeah, pretty fair, right? Like, this is a guy, he's a really good player, right? But he's hurt relatively often, you know, he's a big guy. He's betting on, you know, he's old, you know, you're betting this is going to be his year into his age 31 season and beyond. Like, 7-213, that feels about right. And he was just like, no, like, this sport markets me like Mookie Betts and Mike Trout, right? You put me in all these ads with them. You say I'm as good as these guys. Well, you're going to pay me like that. And he went out and did it. I mean, it was really a remarkable feat from beginning to end.
Yeah, he could be the next conductor of the New York Philharmonic because he orchestrated that offseason, man. It was something to see. All right, let's move along. And we have to talk about the force of nature known as Shohei Ohtani. There's a million ways to go. Andy, I know you've been pondering how miraculous Shohei was again this year. Why don't you start with the Shohei perspective you're so noted for?
Did you know that he pitches and he hits?
What?
Like, he does both of these things. So I don't know, because because it's the off season and because it's sort of moving into free agency mode, I've been thinking about things in the more like crass financial realm, if that makes sense. So let's think about this, right? Jacob DeGrom threw like 60 innings this past year with like I think it was 3.08 ERA. He just got $185 million, right? Carlos Correa is obviously a very good shortstop. He hit 22 homers with an 834 OPS. He just got $350 million. What if I were to tell you that Shohei Ohtani was better than both of them, at least in terms of offense, in terms of Correa, and pitching, in terms of DeGrom? I don't think he's going to get $500 million next offseason. I think that's just going to be hard. But, like, it's definitely going to start with a four if he wants a long-term deal. And, like, when you're talking about Ohtani, like, in order to understand him, you have to create these sort of, like transformer type characters. Like, what if you combine Pete Alonso and Max Fried? What if you combine like Jose Abreu and Carlos Rodon? It's ridiculous, right? But that's like actually what he's done the past two seasons. And I think the steps that he took as a pitcher this year were probably the most interesting thing, because he's been a good hitter the whole time. When he's been healthy in the majors, he sort of was more of a thrower than a pitcher before this season. And he like really sharpened that aspect of his game. And like the only thing that prevented him from pitching enough to win the Cy Young was that he was like an elite hitter the other, you know, days of the week. And it's just, yeah, I mean, he's good. He's a really good player. And I want to leave it at that.
Okay, this just in. Ohtani good, says Andy McCullough.
It's pretty good.
Write that down. You might want to refer to it in some future time. You think that when he goes to negotiate that free agent contract, based on what you just said, he should ask for the Correa deal plus the DeGrom deal? So that's five. Not? What does that come to? Five something? 520 something?
Well, the question is, like, what does this guy want?
Yeah.
Right? Like, we don't exactly know.
Just give it to him. Just give it to him.
So, but is it like, I want a 3-year deal for, you know, $80 million a year, right? Like, I don't know. Like, maybe he's worth that. Maybe not, probably. I don't know. Like, to Steve Cohen, he probably is.
Well, I remember Michael Jordan. Didn't he come back that one time and say, okay, it's time for me to get paid? And it was like a 2-year deal or something.
You know? It was like 2 for $80. Yeah, right, like
I mean, otonic. Yeah. That's the only word I think of.
Otonic. That's the Glanville word.
No other word.
He's otonic. Eno, your thoughts on Shohei?
Well, I don't know if it's just because I'm a pitching dork or Andy was pointing out, I think rightfully, that he took such a a leap forward this year on the pitching side, but I'm just amazed that somebody who has to prepare to hit can also do all the stuff that it takes to be a great starting pitcher. This year, for example, Otani just added a two-seamer in the middle of the season, you know, and it was immediately one of the best two-seamers, you know, on my sheet. So, you know, that's the kind of thing where you remember Clayton Kershaw just, like, picked up the ball and, like, was like, I'm going to throw a slider now. And then it's, like, the best slider in baseball. It's like, you know, these guys at this level, they when they have dedication plus this otherworldly talent, that's when you get these amazing outcomes. But I was trying to put it into perspective just in, you know, everyone's gonna be traveling for the new year and for Christmas and stuff, and I thought I'd put in perspective, you know, the homers and the Judge hit and how Otani's been. So Judge hit 4.8 miles of homers this year, and that's ridiculous. And of course Otani only hit 2.6 miles of homers. You didn't quite have the same prodigious year. However, if you look at those pitches to home plate and how far those traveled, that was 27 miles that he threw the ball, and, you know, often throwing it 100 miles an hour. Tell Dad to slow down if he's at 100 on the freeway. But it's something that I like to bring up because sometimes people say that starting pitchers shouldn't be in for the MVP or don't do as much, you know, game to game as hitters, but they affect a lot of plate appearances. They face a lot of batters, and in fact, they can affect the game just as much, if not more, than an everyday player, even if they don't have to post up every day, as people point out.
Yeah, what a great point. And you know why Otani got better mileage than Judge, right? He's a hybrid. That's my theory.
Well done.
Just thought of that. All right, Doug, why don't you tell us just how Otanic Shohei looked to you, sir?
Well, I think you start off with the money question of, I always vote for making a bank of Otani because he needs his own currency, first of all. And when they pay him, instead of, like, you know, NFTs or whatever, yeah, I think you pay him in Otani dollars with his face on them. And so I think you start there. And then, you know, you have to make up new metrics, right? It's already like you're trying to combine two worlds that just make no sense. It's like, you know, Saturn and Jupiter or something. You got to, like, bring them all together. And I think all the statisticians should come together and come up with just Otani specific statistics. So what's my example? Well, if you talk to Simone Biles, which I haven't, but I know a little bit about gymnastics with my daughter, there's all kinds of moves called the Biles. She has Biles moves. There's like four of them. They didn't try to call it, well, let's call it a quad. No. It's called the Biles. So I think Otani is going to have to, you're going to have to create our own vocabulary, a whole dictionary around him. And then I think he just decides what he wants. So you think, just like Andre Dawson went in during the near strike, right, and went in and said, pay me whatever you want. I think Otani goes in and says, okay, I'm going to start the first number for you. And then he goes all to the GMs, and then they fill in the rest. And then, you know, it's sort of like a website when you go banking for a mortgage. They all bid on him on the website, and then he gives them the numbers. And then they can, and I think what they might do is they might collectively all pool their resources, and he'll actually end up playing for 30 teams. I think that's the best thing. And then when it's all said and done, the capstone of all this is at the All-Star game, he pitches to himself. And then, you know, and then it's over. And then, so that's what I would do for Otani. No numbers needed, just the marvel that he is.
Yeah, this all seems feasible. I was thinking, all right, if we're going to name some Otani-esque stats, what, yeah. Otani PS Plus? Something
should
like that?
Should be. Yeah, I like that. Otani PS, yes.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not? That's it.
All right, this is my favorite annual Shohei stat. Love to do this every year. This is how it worked out this year. His slugging percentage for the season was .519. The poor guys who had to bat against him, on the other hand, they were a little south of .519 by over 200 points. So here's what that means. If we took him right now, like roused him from his nap, whatever he's doing, and said, Shohei, you got to go right back to the mound right now. And we made him keep pitching. And he gave up a home run to the first 29 hitters who marched up there in a row. Those opposing hitters still wouldn't have as high a slugging percentage as he had. This is just crazy. Time to ask the question we ask every time we talk about him. Are we sure he's a real person? Is there any proof? Anybody have any?
I was like a real like skeptic. Like I was like, this is not going to work. Right? Like, when he came
sounds
over,
like you, Andy.
Yeah, I know. Everyone knows I'm a romantic about the sport.
I thought he should close.
But I just didn't see. Like I just didn't think it was going to work. Like it's too hard, right? Like.
That's right.
And that's I think right. there were signs in the years before 2021 that it wasn't exactly working. You know, he wasn't as good of a hitter in the second year, and then he hurt his elbow, and so he wasn't really effective in 2020. But, like, he figured out something going into 2021 where he's, like, kind of able to do this, and it makes it somewhat tough on the roster construction because you kind of got to run a six-man rotation and your DH spot is clogged and you know all that stuff, but like you also have Shohei Ohtani, which like you should be able to manage around. So I don't know, like it's I thought it was he was just gonna get hurt and he wasn't really gonna be able to do both, and like amazingly like he's just getting better at both. It's crazy.
Doesn't it seem like one of the most the highest spending teams and one of the best teams in baseball that's won a championship, won all those games, is actually taking this postseason off just to be in preparation to be in the bidding for them next year? Doesn't that seem like the Dodgers, like, doesn't that explain what the Dodgers are doing right now? It's like, no, we'd rather be in it for next
good
year.
Good explanation. Yeah, I mean, that is as good an explanation for what the Dodgers are doing this winter that I've heard. Otherwise, I have no clue what they're trying to accomplish.
Come on, there's never a bad time to reset your luxury tax threshold.
It happened to me the year before Ohtani's a free agent, sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, Steve Cohen is the richest man in the world, so they're going to have some trouble there. But we'll see. Really?
Well, they can change the Hollywood sign out there and just put Ohtani. Just yeah. take a couple letters on Ohtani.
Ohtaniwood's got a nice ring. It does.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit. I want to do something I don't think we've ever done before, but should be really fun. We're going to look back on the year, but not the way people would normally do it. We're all going to look back on some weird baseball-y thing that we saw in person this year. And Doug, I think we should start with you. You were there on a Sunday night for one of the most memorable things that happened this whole season. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to hear a little slice of what the heck happened. It involved Albert Pujols, but not in the batter's box.
History here in Busch Stadium. Albert Pujols is on the mound. The greatest right-handed hitters of all time making his first ever pitching appearance. This one to left, back at the wall, and it's gone. This could do it. Albert's got his hand up. There you go. The ERA may be 54, but no one's going to forget what we saw tonight.
Doug. I mean, you're broadcasting a Sunday night Cardinals-Giants game. What do you remember when Albert Pujols started walking to the mound?
Well, I kept going, what? What is that? And then I was like, this is cool because, well, first of all, you know, played against him a long time. And, you know, he was the machine. He was very focused, very serious. And I did get to know him. I went to one of his charity events one year, and I think it kind of broke the ice of like the machine. So I, you know, we were cool, but I also knew that with that focus, it's you always wonder with players that are have that type of intensity, like how much joy are they having, or at least expressing on the field. And, you know, also the sense of, are you going to step outside your shell or step outside, you know, your image and your reputation and your excellence and kind of say, you know, let's just turn this into the game we remember as a kid playing wiffle ball in your front yard or stickball as I did against my brother. Those are the moments I thought about this year when Albert Pujols stepped on the mound. I said, you know, this is a good thing. Of course, Molina also stepped on the mound. But the idea that someone with that type of legacy, that type of career, goes out and says, you know what, let me pitch. I just want to do this because it's something I've never done and have fun with it. So, yeah, it's funny because before the game, even that week, we had been talking a lot about, oh, the games, what are we going to do with all these position player pitchers and pitching? And we, you know, if it's over, maybe you just shut the game down, you know, but then you remember, like, this is why you do it. Like, you know, it's just a once in a lifetime kind of moment. And the fans were out of their minds. And I think I skipped calling the game for a minute. I like stepped behind the mic and I started like filming and taking pictures. and I got this shot of him, like his full leg kick up, just about to release the ball. And it was just surreal. I just kept looking at it like, this is absolutely mind-blowing. So it was great. And I think it's one of those things where you just see the childhood nature of the game. It's sort of like when Ohtani was at the All-Star game and people want to take pictures. All-Stars wanted to take pictures with him and you know, do video chats with him. I mean, that's what you need to see and remind us that everybody's still having fun, as they should.
Yeah, it was fun. Is that the only thing that Albert ever did that you didn't do, Doug? Can't remember.
I think I hit 59 home runs once in a year. It was a career. That's right.
Your whole life, yeah.
Yeah, lifetime.
Other than that, it was pretty close.
Close.
Yeah, so Albert, he gave up 4 runs. He gave up 2 home runs. Gave up back-to-back home runs to the catcher and the pitcher. Although, in fairness to him, the pitcher was actually not a pitcher. It was Luis Gonzalez, who also hits for a living because this game was off the rails. Best part, he got the last 3 outs in a game the Cardinals won. So he broke the record for oldest position player to finish off a win. And you know who held it? Babe Ruth, because who else would hold it? It was quite the extravaganza. Andy, you have any thoughts on Albert's pitching exploits?
I think he should come back and do it again. I mean, I think he should just try and make it as a pitcher at this point. What he did in the second half, just as a hitter and sort of putting positives, maybe the wrong. I mean, I don't know. What are positive? Like a positive ending to his career, right? Because like what happened to Albert Pujols in the 2010s was fairly sad. You watch this guy who was like the best of his generation just sort of, wither away because of injury and all that stuff. And so to see him for a few months hitting like it was 2006 again was pretty cool, I think. And to see the way that fans in St. Louis responded to him, to see, you know, the highlights from hitting number 700 in Dodger Stadium, it was the comeback of the year in some ways, or the revival of the year, while saying goodbye. It was nice.
Yeah, we just spent an hour talking about Aaron Judge and who had a higher slugging percentage against left-handed pitchers this year. Albert or Aaron Judge? It was Albert at 42. That is just nuts. I want to give Eno a chance to talk about the wildest thing that he saw this year, which kind of plays off of what Doug was talking about. But if you do want to talk about Albert first, Eno, I won't stop you.
No, I just, you know, I love the moments of joy that you can kind of see. I like how Doug set it up because, you know, I didn't always get the greatest interviews out of Albert.
Yeah.
He was a cagey guy. I don't know. There were people, maybe other people who did had better luck with him, but I had a harder time. So it was kind of, you know, even as someone who covers him, I was like, okay, he's a machine. And you can tell that his teammates love him. You know, like you can tell that everyone around him loves him. And that, you saw that in LA, you know, he was there for a short time. But they seem to really love him. You can see it when Manny Machado and him are like just having a whole like, you know, hugging and and saying hi and like, you know, they're just like having breakfast out by third base together, you know, like, oh, and then Manny has to be like, oh, there's a game, and like, you know, get back into fielding position. But, you know, to see him on the mound like that was to see, I think, what his teammates saw out of him, which is someone who's very serious, but also loves the game and knows how to have fun.
Yeah, the joy. You know, anytime something like that happens, I'm always looking for somebody to provide humorous commentary. And so I texted Adam Wainwright just to see if he'd be interested in firing out some quips on Albert. And sometimes, you know, Waino can take a couple of days to get back to you. Like 30 seconds later, what do you need? So he apparently enjoyed it, as did everybody in the yard. All right, Eno, what's the wildest thing that you saw this year?
Well, you know, one of my favorite plays of all time was when Michael Morse hit a grand slam for the Nationals, and they had to review it, and it was in the early days of review. So they made him run the bases once they decided it was a homer. So he took a fake swing and then ran around. So I love when the players turn into actors. And I think you can kind of hear that, see that in this clip where, you know, Travis d'Arnaud like acts like D. Strange Gordon has just blown him up to pieces after.
Yeah, let's hear this. We can actually hear this, and then Eno can tell us what the heck this was.
Yes.
No, I mean, it's just hilarious. When you're watching it, you know, TDA is just spread eagle on the ground, like, you know, like he's just had his hand blown off or whatever. Like he's I think the announcer says he's dead, you know. So it's like it's a funny moment, and it's just in the eighth inning of a blowout, and D. Strange Gordon is just throwing 52 mile an hour lollipops. So yeah, I bet he got a little bit of a bruise, but not too bad of one. One thing that I just thought was funny is that I also like when these moments have something to do with trends in the game. You know, that was how I sort of reacted to Judge's, you know, thing too. I always kind of see the game in that light. More position players through this year than ever before. We had 2,000 pitches by position players this year. One of the worst batting average because, you know, they're position players. You're going to use them more. You're going to use even worse position players. And I just think it's, you know, I think Doug, you made a reference to it. Like, leading up to this, you're already talking about what can we do about this, right? Like, is there something that needs to be done about it? And I do think that the more this happens, the more it's not going to be as fun to watch. We used to have a Twitter campaign that was like, position players pitching, and people would be like, yeah! Like, and now it's kind of like, yeah, it's a Tuesday. But there's no way for me, I think, to legislate it out, because you're just creating more rules. And really what we're doing here is saving our better pitchers for better days. There is a finding from Baseball Prospectus where they said that every pitch makes you worse over the course of a season. So why put a guy in there that you could want to use later? It's a funny thing that might become less whimsical over time because we're seeing it more, but I also don't think it's worth legislating out of the game.
All right, I guess this is where I provide a little of my invaluable perspective. you know, you mentioned we had a record for most position players pitching. 132 position players took the mound this year. 132. That is crazy. 18 times we had position players come in to pitch with their teams leading.
Yes.
Albert Pujols was one of those. Three of them with shutouts going on, and then those guys messed up the whole shutout thing. Hanser Alberto pitched 10 times, and the Dodgers went 8-2 when he pitched. Did we forget to ask Dave Roberts about that when he was here, Doug? What was wrong with us?
Oh, yeah, I forgot that one.
Right, and the 18 times they came in to pitch with their teams leading does not even count. I think it was the last game of the season when Luis Torrens was the winning pitcher
in extra
for the Mariners, right, in an extra inning game. Oh, my God. So Doug, Andy, you guys want to weigh in on this trend?
I'll toss to Andy on this first.
My only thought is that if without this, we wouldn't have seen Anthony Rendon hitting a left-handed home run off Brett Phillips, which was hilarious in that it underscored how supremely talented Anthony Rendon is. And it also was a nice sort of rejoinder to players complaining about the baseball being dead, which, like, yes, it was, right? Like, it was, like, literally like less bouncy than it had been, but also like, all right, this guy just hit a homer with his left hand. Like, you can just hit it harder, you know, just maybe hit it over the fence. Like, that's, you're allowed to do it. This guy just did it from the other side of the plate.
But, you know, yeah, I think I thought about Javi Baez too, hitting too left-handed. Like,
yeah. Hey, Doug, remember when this was so rare, we had a stupid baseball bet based on position players pitching 1 year. I actually have a broken trophy sitting on my shelf over here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we tied the 1 year, right? We tied, you know, fittingly, right? Because Ben Zobrist pitched the last game of the season. You were like, oh, it's over. And then Hugh had the National League.
Right.
And then, No, I mean, the fun part about it to me is, and I understand, like, the caliber question, but, you know, all through the time playing, you realize, like, man, your teammates have all these talents that people don't even know about, right? They, you know, I watched, you know, guys, I remember coming out early one time and Andrew Jones was hitting left-handed and he was hitting balls opposite field to left center. I mean, it's like, what? You know, so, you know, I think it's, you know, outside of just their baseball skills. So I think it's kind of fun to watch, like, Desi Relaford pitch, who was throwing like 91 with a splitter, and how I used to have catches with him before the game all the time. And he was always working on, you know, he could imitate anybody's motion. So although, yes, you're trying to win a major league game, sometimes the games are completely out of hand. And I know for the players, they have a blast. The ones that, you know, Anthony Rizzo pitching to Freddie Freeman and all that, you know, they're having a lot of fun. And I think it's good for the fans to see that, you know, just to do something different. Because it's a long season, 162 games. You know, you're just like, okay, here we are. We're in Pittsburgh. We just lost 7 in a row. Well, you know, it's like, what are we doing? And then, you know, just something to kind of keep the guys, you know, kind of going. It's nice to get that chance. I mean, I pitched in high school. I pitched in college. I would have been fun to get on the mound just to see what happened. And so that's, you know, the part that, you know, I think, you know, said it well, like, okay, you don't necessarily legislate it out. You know, it's kind of ridiculous and absurd, but every once in a while you get these moments that are valuable and you want to just keep that there just in case. And because it's a long season, if nothing else, even if it's for the players, just let them have their fun.
I'm glad you guys are in favor. None of you three are even the ones who write a column called The Weird and Wild. This makes my life way easier. All right, Andy, it is your turn. What was the weirdest thing that you saw in person this year? Do you want to lead into the exciting highlight of this magical moment?
So one of my favorite things maybe it happens in other sports. I don't know. I haven't thought about this like holistically, but I really like it when very meaningful games move off the sort of accepted rails of behavior and things start happening that you like genuinely don't expect, not even just like you know, a pitch or a hit or something, but like when the game just suddenly pivots into weird territory. And so I take you back to game 3 of the wild card round when Buck Showalter walked out of his dugout at Citi Field and went to go talk to the umpires.
And we'll see what this is about. He's going to talk to Alfonso Marquez at first base. And now Joe Musgrove is kind of looking over there at the manager of the Mets, wondering what's this all about. They bring Melvin out. They're checking the glove, Musgrove. They'll look at the hat. And they're checking his ears. Pretty thorough search. And that appears to have yielded nothing.
This was not as funny as when Max Scherzer offered to take off his pants last year while getting checked for sticky substances. But the image of Joe Musgrove with his ears just like glistening, you know, like radioactive glistening, just glaring at the Mets dugout as an umpire gently caressed them in search of sticky substances, really underscored that I should have tried harder in high school and done more with my life, I think, that covered this. That knowing that my job that night involved trying to explain why that man was touching that other man's ears was a real wake-up call for me. I enjoyed that. I also enjoyed fun side note is Andrew McCutchen was on Twitter that night and was convinced that he had put Red Hot on his ears, which I had heard, like, I guess that's a thing players do, but I remember reading that, like, Roger Clemens would put that in an unmentionable area.
Yeah. Oh, and Jake so Peavy, yeah.
Yeah, like, so it seems like moving to the ears is progress. Right. So I am excited for the continued evolution of the sport. So that was it for me. You know, just the spectacle of an umpire just sort of, you know, lovingly touching Joe Musgrove's ears was really great.
Can you hear me now? And ironically, with the Red Hot, Joe Musgrove just threw the fastest pitch in Antarctica, right? Isn't that where he went?
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's right. You know, he just went 180 on that one.
Yeah.
How do you stay warm? Now we know. Right. You know, the whole inspection thing was basically a comedy show within the show all year, I thought. The Musgrove inspection was not even my favorite umpire inspection of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the game in September when Rocco Baldelli had Ted Barrett go out to run his hands through James Karinchak's hair?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
It's tremendous. It's all. If you haven't seen it, there is a thing called the internet. You can find it out there. So trust good. Me. And, you know, they found nothing. And afterwards, Karinchak said, "Justice is served." Didn't Clarence Darrow say that once?
Oh my God!
Wow.
But the funniest thing is, you could see so many. You could read the umpires. There's so many. You could see. I don't know if you're reading. If it was just me reading into it, but I was like, one. I had that very much Andy. Like, what am I doing here? Like, why is this happening? There was definitely that. And then there was also a second one, which was like, if I found something, why would I know what it would? How would I know?
Yeah,
I found right. something. Yeah. This guy's hair feels okay, nice. There is something in it. What am I supposed to do now?
That's a great point.
I mean, they need to spice this up a little bit. First of all, they need to put TSA pre-check on it. All right, TSA, you just have a TSA thing. Right. You swab the person. You have a kit. You know, we're all used to testing ourselves now. And you get the swab off the hair. I mean, you know, let's just go all in. Get a registered nurse. Because umpires don't want to do this. You know, they don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So I think you add to the umpiring crew.
Okay, so
that's
wait. So
point,
if James Karinchak had pre-check, he wouldn't have had to remove his cap.
Yeah, he'd been fine. Exactly. He was all set.
Right. I just love the idea of the only way to know if he's using sticky stumps is that the umpire's hand just gets stuck. He's just basically like, "What do we do?
We got you now."
Yeah.
Super
glue.
All
right. I guess we're both out of here.
Yeah.
And another underrated one was Dan Bellino massaging Madison Bumgarner's hand. Just like just blatantly trying to get Bumgarner upset. That was awesome.
Oh, the stare. Oh, my goodness.
Well, yeah, I enjoy that. I like that stuff is I know, like, fans hate, like, ump show type stuff. Like, I find it hilarious. Like, I think it's one of the funniest things that can happen in a game.
Yeah.
These are all uniquely baseball moments. All of our moments, like, they're uniquely baseball moments, but they sort of go beyond it because there's, like, emotions and people. And that's what we love to see. Yeah. But these are, like, unexpected emotions and people doing unexpected things. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I'm going to wind up being the one who does an actual baseball thing for my highlight. But, you know, I had so many to choose from. What were my priorities? I thought I got to do something that our esteemed producer, Tim McMaster, can easily find a great play-by-play clip of. So, Mr. Mayor, if you're listening, you're welcome. I know you're listening. You're on the Zoom. This is from Game 4 of the Phillies-Braves Division Series. JT Realmuto comes to the plate. And let's hear this because it's an epic call.
Fly to center field. Harris on the move. Still going. Michael Harris can't get there. And Realmuto can run for days. JT on his way to third. He looks for it inside the Parker. And the catcher has won.
So how good was that call? That with inside the Parker. How good was it? So the call was one reason to go down this road. The other reason was I just wanted to pick something that would give you guys an idea of what it's like to be me sitting in a press box when a thing like this breaks out. My fellow writers are literally lining up at my seat because they figure I'm going to know off the top of my head, hey, when's the last time a freaking catcher hit an inside the park homer, let alone in the postseason? And, you know, I don't know how I became that guy. I don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm there. There's no escaping it. And so because I'm there, I'm going to give you the answer. Everything that you wanted to know about inside the park postseason homers, inside the park catcher homers. Here we go. Okay. Last postseason inside the park homer by a National League player at any position was hit in the Calvin Coolidge administration. 1926. Tommy, was it Thiveno? he played for the Cardinals. It had to be a great moment because the fly ball he hit the glove of Babe Ruth.
Ooh.
Pretty good, right?
Error.
Okay, it was the first postseason inside the Parker by a catcher since that would be never because he was the first. How many catchers hit an inside the park home run in the entire regular season? That's over 2,400 games. That would also be none, but JT Realmuto hit one in the postseason. And then how many Phillies catchers have hit an inside the park home run in Philadelphia in the last 100 years? Other than him, the answer is one, and it was 75 years ago.
Oh.
By Andy Semenik.
Semenik, yeah.
And then this guy hit one, and the crazy thing was, it was not even his first inside the park home run in that park. He also hit one once as a Marlin. Just not as a catcher. He was playing first base that day because that used to be a thing. So, boys, that's all I got. Is that weird enough for you?
I love it.
That is.
I love it. There's a you know, Realmuto has like a little bit of an Ohtani-esque thing going for him in one facet of the game when it comes to his legs. He is the best catcher against the run in baseball and also the best running catcher. He has the number one pop time among catchers to second base, and he's the second fastest catcher, stole the most bases, and has, by defensive run saves, the best, he's the most runs against stolen bases. So he stops the running game down, and he also creates a running game for his own team.
Wow.
Yeah. There's always a stat where he's got a faster sprint speed than D. Strange Gordon, or your favorite sprint champ.
Yeah, he's, what an athlete, man.
The entire like Phillies postseason is like the weird and wild, right? Like, I mean, just this 87 win team morphing into, you know, I don't even like a juggernaut. You know, obviously what the Astros won, but like that, Jason, that had to just be like the most fun being around that team every day. I was always with them in the World Series, and it was just like, I was like, man, these guys are having a good time, it seems like.
It was so nuts. Nothing made sense. You know, they finished the regular season. They won 10 of their last 31 games. And then they started the postseason and won 10-2. what is going on here? We are all mixed up. That team was all mixed up. I had many, many to pick from. But we went with JT all because we're always thinking here of the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, and his production challenges. It's just what we're all about. Am I right, Doug?
Absolutely. We got to take care of our mayor. Yes, and,
sir. If your mayor happy, statue.
I'm just throwing
well.
Another statue for the mayor. I like statues.
Right. Well, guys, I don't know if we have adequately summed up what a wild year it was in baseball, but here's the important part. We had fun. Okay. So Andy, you know, you guys are awesome. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And thanks for visiting us in Starkville. We'll see you in 2023, my friends. Okay, Doug, one more time in 2022. It's time for Starkville Trivia, our way of involving you, our favorite listeners, in this show. Doug, once again this year, we proved we're not very good at this. But you know what we're really good at, it turns out? Talking ourselves out of the correct answer. So what should our New Year's resolution be so we can avoid doing that again in 2023?
Well, I mean, I think we have shown also that we are stellar during the postseason. So when it counts, we step it up. And I think we just need to figure out how to play playoff postseason baseball in April. I'm not sure how you do that, but that would be the key to our success.
Yeah, you think we could rise to the moment? It's not too much to ask.
That's right.
All right, let's do that.
Let's do it.
Okay, well, for our final trivia question of 2022, we are joined by a special trivia guest star. How cool is that? It's our good friend Tyler Kepner, the fantastic baseball columnist for the New York Times, but also the author of my favorite baseball book of the year. It's called The Grandest Stage, A History of the World Series. Doug, it's so good. I loved every page. Seriously. So Tyler, welcome back to Starkville, man. How are those book sales going?
Pretty good. It's nice to nice to talk to you guys. It's good to know that some people are buying your book and putting it in their stocking for putting it under the tree for their friends, and that's pretty cool. I've been doing some signings here, and I've only been practicing my signature, Jason, since I was about 8 years old watching watching Mike Schmidt and Steve Carlton down at the Vet. And so it's finally getting that time to put that signature to use, I guess.
Yeah, I've signed a lot of books too, and it's like my signature just got worse as I went along. So hopefully, you don't do that. Hey, since you're here, you should tell us about your book. What inspired you to want to write it? And did you have a favorite moment in writing it or reporting it?
Well, ever since I went to the first World Series game of my life in 1983. It was weird because as Doug remembers as a Philly fan, like it wasn't the memorable, Phillies World Series really was 80. But I was just a little too young for that. So 83 was mine and they lost in five games to Baltimore, but I got to be there for game 4 and 5. And it really just stuck with me how exciting that was and how cool it was that the team I followed all year was, all the time was suddenly the center of the baseball universe. And so now to be able to cover the World Series every year, and to have seen hundreds of games on this stage, I felt like I could bring a perspective to it that was maybe different than like a standard chronology, because it's not a chronology. I go through a bunch of different themes that sort of apply to all World Series, whether it's managing in the series or handling pressure or unlikely heroes, that kind of thing. And I think through those themes, it was a fun way to do it because you didn't get locked into the drudgery of like, all right, well, today I wrote 1939, tomorrow I got to write 1940 and then 1941. And then, that gets kind of boring. Right. So, it was like writing a bunch of different, thematic articles about this great event. And, I had a blast doing it. I think one of the cool moments was when I was actually happened to be at a hotel in Boston that overlooked the, Charles River, which overlooked the site of the old Braves Field, which is now called Nickerson Field at Boston University, where they play they play soccer and lacrosse there and stuff. But it still has it still is an athletic field. It still has the original stands from Braves Field. And so as I'm looking out over that window, who calls me back but Eddie Robinson, who played in the 1948 World Series for the Indians at Braves Field. And so I'm talking to a guy. He has since died, but he was about, I think, 99 years old or so.
Oh.
And I'm talking to him on the phone while looking out on the site of the World Series that he won back in 48. So that was, you know, that was kind of surreal to be able to link those two things together like that.
Wow, that is so great. We could talk about this book for an hour, but all I can tell you is it's great. If you're listening to this, if you're still looking for a gift for a baseball lover, this book is it. Okay, got it? Go get the book. For some reason, Doug, you know this, every time Tyler joins our show, he's driving someplace.
Yeah.
So he pulled off at a rest area. Do you just drive a lot, or is our timing good?
I just drive a lot. I'm always picking up some kid somewhere and taking that kid somewhere else. You know, it's college time now where the kids come home for exam. So, or from exam. So yeah, I'm just doing the pickup. A lot of driving up here in New England.
We're all familiar with the driving, driving your kids wherever the heck they have to go.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yep.
Well, listen, we're really happy to have you here. You have a trivia question that is right out of your book. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, it's, you know, there's so much packed in there. I think I put this in there, but it's certainly memories from these games are in there for sure. But this is one of my can I say it? Or do we need a drum roll?
Yeah, why don't you hit us with this trivia and we'll get right to it.
All right. Well, so I want to know from you guys if you can identify the two pitchers, one in the 80s and one in the 10s, who threw the first pitch and the last pitch of the same World Series. In other words, the first pitch of the top of the first inning of game one and also the final pitch of the whole thing.
Okay.
Two guys did it, one in the 80s and one in the 10s. Who might those people be?
Okay, I know I've said this before, but I think we have a shot at this, Doug.
Think you do. If you think of it hard enough, you can probably get it.
Yeah, the hints here are really helpful, too.
To
have the decade is really helpful. And then the other thing is, there can only be two scenarios here. Either this guy pitched a complete game in the first and last game of the World Series, or he started the first game and he closed out the last game. So I think we can figure this out. I feel like
He didn't necessarily have to pitch a complete game in the first game. All he had to do was throw the first.
Start
the first one.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's complete game, start the last one, and then or close the last one.
Right.
Yeah. Or close. Yep.
Okay. So I feel like the pitcher from the 80s, doesn't that have to be Earl Hershiser in 88? Tommy Lasorda, it felt like he never took him out of a game.
He blew out his arm.
I know he did finish one game in relief. I think that was the NLCS, but I could be wrong. Whatever, it was his year. It was his October. Yeah. You know, I thought
three starts in the World Series, like four games. It was he pitched every other second. I mean, so that does feel right. I mean,
he pitched a lot. His elbow could tell you all about
that.
You know, I also thought about Brett Saberhagen in 85, but my gut here is Hershiser just feels right. And I remember Tyler's conversation with him in the book. So then the from the 2010s.
Oh yeah.
I think the obvious answer is Madison Bumgarner, right? We know that he threw the last pitch of the World Series in relief in 2014 and a lot more pitches leading up to it. But Salvador Perez is familiar with how that one went. So the question is...
That was a dancing. Okay.
Yeah. So the question is whether he also threw the first pitch.
Yeah.
I think that answer is yes. But my other guess was Chris Sale... 2018, because I know he closed out the last game, but he was hurting during that World Series. So did he start game one? I feel like he didn't. So it almost has to be Mad Bum or Chris Sale from that decade. Doug, what do you think?
Those are the two I had. I had Hershiser just because I remember him like blowing out his arm and throwing like every inning of the World Series.
Right.
And I thought of Mad Bum. I mean, the only doubt I had was like, well, were they, because first pitch means you're the home team, right? So I wasn't sure like, okay, well, maybe they were on the road. I was trying to remember if that would jog the difference between like Sale and like were the Giants, and this was when the All-Star game, right, decided home field advantage. So
here's
that's the key to the question. If Doug is grasping it, that's the key to the question is you remember it's easier to remember the last out of the series, but you've got to also know if that pitcher was a at a home, the starter in game one at home.
So Chris Sale's out because the series. Oh, wait, no. The series started in Boston, so he's not out. He's very much alive to do it. Bumgarner.
Okay, I mean,
so let me think about this. That World Series ended in Kansas City, so he couldn't possibly have done it because the Giants were the road team, so only the home team pitcher would have. Okay, I think it's got to be Chris Sale then.
I don't know. I mean, that's the only thing I thought about right away. Like, you had to be at home for game one.
Yes.
Okay. Chris Sale it is. Chris Sale is the right answer for the 2010. You got it.
Okay, so let me think about
the 80s. He started game one, but then he was, as you say, he was kind of shaky health-wise, and they had Price start game five on short rest, and Sale just got the last three outs. But, so, yeah, right. Chris Sale for the 10.
Okay, so let's think through 88. That series started in Dodger Stadium because that's where the Eckersley home run was. So Oral Hershiser qualifies there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the World Series only went five games, so it ended in
Oakland.
So that qualifies there.
Right. Isn't it the scene where he turns? Doesn't he turn his back and like he's like in tears or something? Like, wasn't that him? Like, he turned. I don't know. I just remember Hershiser having a moment.
I don't know.
Because we talked to him somewhere in Starkville.
he's been here. All right, so, you know.
I mean, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I remember reading this in Tyler's book. Mm-hmm. I just can't remember the answer. But I just think we should go with our best guess here. We've already got Chris Sale right. So, Doug, do you want to go with Hershiser is the other?
That's all I can think. I thought about the Twins and all, but that was like, that was the big moment was 91, so it wasn't in the 80s. Right. I mean, that's my best answer, Oral Hershiser.
Okay, Tyler, is there any chance that the answer to your question is Chris Sale and Oral Hershiser?
Chris Sale's right, Oral Hershiser is not. Remember, Oral Hershiser did not pitch game one of that series. That was Tim Belcher. Who threw the first pitch of game one. Hershiser pitched game two at Dodger Stadium. But because he had pitched game seven against the Mets, he wasn't quite rested enough to start game one of that series. So it was not Oral Hershiser. And you have not mentioned this man's name yet.
Okay, so it wasn't Sabre.
Well, I feel better when that's true, yeah.
Let's see here. Okay, well, so definitely not Saberhagen. Frank Viola comes to mind.
You both should really know it.
86. Who won the? No,
86.
Because that was Jesse Orosco. 88 was Dodger. Who was 88?
Four only went four games, so there's no way.
Yeah.
Oh wait, 89. Is there a way?
Earthquake was that?
No, that was 80. Yeah, 89. But I know. Okay, it's not 89.
83.
It could be 89. It could be Dave Stewart. No wait. It could be Dave Stewart. In 89.
I don't know.
Ooh,
because he. What about? Well, since he's a Philly, he's talking about. He mentioned Phillies his first World Series. 83 was the Orioles one, but they beat him 4 out of 5, right? So.
Probably not. No, it opened in Philly, so that doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work either.
Wasn't Carlton in 80?
82.
81. Who started game one for the Dodgers in 81? I have no idea.
Jerry Reese. I don't know.
So you want to go Dave Stewart?
Yeah, I'll go with that. I feel better that we didn't
since he's
know
giving us an extra guess. Tim's laughing here. Okay, we're going to go with Chris Sale and Dave Stewart.
Oh, fellas. No, it was not Dave Stewart. Dave Stewart pitched the first, he did start game one and he threw the first pitch, but he remember after the earthquake, they reset their rotation. So he started
back
game,
and three,
game three, not game four, which is Mike Moore. And it, anyway, it wasn't a complete game because Eckersley finished it. So you gloss right over it. 1983, that World Series opened in Baltimore and mm-hmm. Scott McGregor was the game one starter. He took the loss that night because Doug's hero, Gary Maddox, hit a big home run.
Yeah.
But then in game five, Scott McGregor was in total control. He threw a shutout and threw the last pitch to Gary Maddox, a little line drive out. So it was Scotty McGregor, 1983, and Chris Sale, 2018.
That's a good one. Two lefties. All right.
Yeah. Doug, we should have gotten this.
I had no chance at that. I tuned out 83. I was happy with 80. Yeah.
You know, as usual, we have just overthought it, and we do that week after week.
That was a good at least.
Well, Jason, you made the mistake there because you said you eliminated 83 because you said, well, that series started in Philly. It ended in Philly. It didn't start there, though. So that was right. I like a question like that because it's like those old Jackie Short ballpark trivia questions, right, Jason, where it's not just how many home runs did Mickey Mantle hit. Then you either know it or you don't. It's like it makes you think about, well, we can eliminate this one and eliminate that one because you have to know a lot of different things and sort of put the puzzle together. So I could see your guys' brains working on that. That's how you got Sale. Yeah. Well, you just missed McGregor because he's a little more obscure than 40 years ago. So
as always, all I know is Oral Hershiser should have been the answer.
He should have been. Yep. Tim Bell's forgotten away.
At any rate, we all know the highlight of these trivia segments is the part of the segment where we don't even talk. It's the part where we bring in the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, to play another one of his epic play-by-play clips involving this week's question. So, Tim, what do you got for us?
Well, Chris Sale was way too recent to go with that one. So we have to go back to 1983, not just because it was the Phillies were involved, it was back then, but how about the broadcast team on this one? Al Michaels and Howard Cosell. Here it is.
0-2 the count on Maddox. A liner, and the Orioles are the world champions. Rick Dempsey has just been named the unanimous most valuable player in this, the 1983 World Series. The pictures you have just seen all spoke for themselves. And there's Rick Dempsey being hugged.
The pictures you have seen all spoke for themselves, said Cosell. not pictured in that highlight, Scott McGregor.
Yep, that was the last series that Cosell did. And if you listen to that one, the other color commentator for the games is Earl Weaver, who had just managed the Orioles. So he had a lot of insights in that one. I think Cosell was supposed to do it in 85 also, but he kind of flamed out there with ABC, and that birthed a broadcast career, network career of Tim McCarver. So, that was the last one for Howard Cosell.
Two things in life never change. One is Glanville and I missing the trivia questions. The other is Tyler Kepner never ceasing to entertain us, not just with trivia, but with his writing. Tyler, I seriously, seriously love your book, man. The Grandest Stage, A History of the World Series. Before we let you go, I'm going to let you tell people how to purchase this item.
Well, you can go on. I would suggest going to your local bookstore. Keep those local booksellers in business these days. You could go to Barnes & Noble. You could go to Amazon and all those great places. But if you have a neighborhood bookstore in Starkville or wherever you happen to live, go check out their shelves because it should be there. So, thanks for letting me talk about it. It was a really fun experience to do it. Just to kind of honor that event with a book like that was pretty cool because I mean in 1980 we talked about it. Like 1980 that was the highest rated World Series game ever was 1980 and now not as many people watch it as they did back then, but we all know it's still still a great event, and the history of it that kind of resonates as Jason always points out, when something big will happen. That's the first time in World Series history since, Ed Walsh in 1906, to be able to reach back to stuff like that is,
it's part of what makes it so special.
That doesn't sound like me at all. Yeah, it kind of does. Tyler Kepner, everybody. Right. He's the best. Tyler, thanks for joining us here in Starkville, man. We'll see you at the neighborhood Starkville bookshop for a book signing, and hope your holidays are fantastic.
Yeah, same to you guys. And if you want more trivia, more excruciating trivia questions from me, the New York Times will have one on Christmas morning, just for all you baseball trivia lovers. And my annual trivia quiz. Hey, great talking to you guys as always, Doug and Jason. You guys are the best. Tough. You really are.
Thanks,
anytime.
Man.
Strange but true.
Well, Doug, since it's the final show of the year, how can we not do a Strange But True Feats of the Year segment? So we're just going to do a little sampling of some of our favorites. And I want to start with one that somehow or other we never did get to talk about on the show. I was actually on vacation when this happened in August, but it's such a classic. Rodolfo Castro of the Pirates goes to slide into third base in Arizona. Let's hear what happened next.
Might have broken the bat right there, and that's going to drop in front of Thomas. Castro hustling into third, and it's a pair of two-out base runners for the Pirates. Have you ever played with a phone in your pocket?
No. I mean, we didn't have cell phones back when I played. I don't understand that even a little bit.
It's Rodolfo Castro is apparently playing with his phone. Hey, you take it.
You know the old expression, get the call right? I think Rodolfo Castro might have misunderstood that one. Doug, you have any thoughts on a guy sliding into third base with a phone in his pocket of his uniform?
I think it's very important to be sensitive to the time we're in. Social media, I think you need to open up the rules a little bit and be able to text, tweet, and like something from third base every once in a while. I mean, because people are curious all the time about when people get to first base, what are the first basemen, what are they talking about? There's time for conversations. Third baseman feels left out often. And I think it's time that we respect that and realize that they want to have conversations with the opposing team as well. And no better way to do that than you could call. And just in case the third baseman is not who the intended phone conversation is meant for, the runner at third can call the first baseman across the diamond who's used to talking to people. And I thought it was very consistent with the modern era and how we're moving towards a more communication open based society. And that's okay. I think it's very risky because it could be an expensive phone. You could break it at any time. He clearly didn't care. He just wanted to talk. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, you know who didn't think it was such a forward-thinking moment? Major League Baseball, because they suspended him for doing that. But I enjoyed it, personally.
What was the charge? What was he charged with?
You're not allowed to have a phone on the field. Like, it was a major scandal when the Red Sox and Yankees were supposedly doing the thing with the Apple Watches, right?
You get him a phone?
You're running around the bases? No. But you know, like my wife is always saying when we get in the car, I can't find my phone. You have no idea how tempted I am every time to say, maybe Rodolfo Castro has it. But she has no idea who that is. So it's just one of those many things that would be lost on her that I say.
Well, he didn't answer it, though. So, you know, it's one of those things, you hit find my iPhone, if he doesn't answer it, you know, you could see it as a coaster or a batting glove or something. I think he could reinterpret it if he wants to get out of that charge. But, you know, next time, I think he's learned, he's moving on.
Yeah, he should have a voicemail message. I'm not home right now. I'm on third.
I'm on third right now. Well, do you remember his dad, by the way, charged Todd Stottlemyre from second base? He didn't charge him from the mound from home. He went around, waited till he got to second, and Stottlemyre was like coming set, and he just charged from second base. I'm like, what in the world? I had never seen anything like that. So yeah,
innovative. So it's okay. Yeah. All right, one more. Now, Doug, I'm working on my annual Strange But True Feats of the Year column, mm-hmm. and you know, one of the things that we've done is both at The Athletic and on Twitter asked readers to nominate their favorites. You can, if you're a subscriber to The Athletic, you can find a link to do this on the MLB page. If you're not a subscriber, look at the top of my Twitter feed. There's a place to reply to this plea for reader favorites. But so far, we have to do the one that has come up more than any other. This is from June, Doug. This is Astros against Rangers. So second inning of this game between these two teams, it was in Texas. Luis Garcia was pitching for the Astros, and he does the big immaculate inning thing, right? Nathaniel Lowe, Ezekiel Duran, Brad Miller, all strike out on a total of 9 pitches. Strike 1, 2, 3, strike 1, 2, 3, strike 1, 2, 3. Okay, so that's what they call an immaculate inning. Now, 5 innings later, Phil Maton comes in to pitch for the Astros. Guess what happened next?
Here we go. Are you going to see history twice in one game? He yes! did it!
That was incredible!
You've got to be kidding me! Two immaculate innings.
Two of them.
In one game. That has to be a new major league mark. That could not have ever happened before.
So, what was that? That's 2 immaculate innings in one game, both against the same 3 hitters? What? So, this took so long to look up this stuff. So long. I'm so crazed. But, okay, the Rangers, during the regular season, their hitters had not had any immaculate innings in 32 years. So, between the last time and this game, they'd played 5,060 games and had no immaculate innings, and then had 2 of them in the same game. I counted up all this stuff. In between those games, 174,000 at-bats, 35,000 strikeouts in over 45,000 innings, and had no immaculate innings. And then in this game, they had 2 immaculate innings in the span of 21 at-bats, because baseball is just the best. Doug, your thoughts?
Well, first thing that comes to mind is a sponsorship. What do you do with, you got to sponsor this. So, of course, it's got to be some vacuum cleaner, Dyson, some Hoover. I mean, we got to step it up. Good. So if you're immaculate, you are cleaning the carpet. So I think you got to give you got to walk out on the mound immediately with a piece of carpet, some scrap carpet, and a vacuum cleaner. And so that's how you got to memorialize it. It might be gold, maybe a gold vacuum cleaner. So I suggest that Hoover and everybody get on board right now. Let's start there. Now, I always think about Kevin Gausman. Yeah, it's a random kind of connection. But I interviewed him a couple of years ago. And I know his career, he was kind of like, starter, reliever. He was sort of finding himself for a long time. And now, of course, he's one of the best out there. And I remember him saying, I asked him, well, when did you kind of turn the corner? He's like, it's when I threw an immaculate inning and then I threw another one. He said, that was the moment that I felt I belonged in the big leagues. So it's interesting, that he put so much weight on that feat that sometimes just kind of random. I mean, yeah, it's dominant, of course, but it's also sometimes just swing and miss, he missed the pitch. So it can have meaning in that sense of not only the rarity, but a pitcher kind of realizing wait a minute, I just struck 3 major league hitters out on 9 pitches. That's like when you are 18 pitching in little league type, you're just dominant in high school. So I like that idea that not only do you give someone a golden vacuum cleaner, but you recognize that it could be a career changing moment. I don't know what those pitchers did after that, but hey, get them a vacuum cleaner.
So if a pitcher throws an immaculate inning, should he be exempt from having a shower after the game? He's immaculate.
Or he could use the vacuum cleaner or the dustbuster on his own body. I mean, he doesn't need it. So,
I guess so. By the way, the Rangers also had a 3rd immaculate inning later in the season. So they went, 45,000 innings and had none. And then they just couldn't stop.
Because they're immaculate. They're very clean.
Right. And if so, if you would like to contribute an item as strange or as true, but especially as strange as this one, go to the MLB page at The Athletic or go find my Twitter feed and feel free to nominate your favorite strange but true moments of 2022, because that column is coming right up if I ever actually have the time to write it. All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all off-season long on The Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free, everywhere you get your podcasts. And if you would like to read any of the fantastic hot stove baseball coverage in The Athletic, I can tell you how to do that. Just go to theathletic.com/baseballshow. And if you're a new subscriber, you can subscribe for $2 a month for the next 12 months. But also remember, you too can be part of this podcast. Every show, we pick the most fun listener trivia question of the week. And then that listener gets to join us right here and prove once again, there is almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong. You can email us the question at Starkville with an E on the end at theathletic.com, or Twitter continues to operate, and so you can try to find us on Twitter. I know that sounds hard, but Doug, is it easier than it sounds?
It is extremely easy. So far, my name has not been co-opted into anything else, so it is still at Doug Glanville, DougGlanville, and I'll be there.
Yeah, and I'll be there. At JAYSONST, so you can spell my name just like you spell Doug's name, but you don't have to finish. Just after that, after the ST, you can move on, do something else. Also, remember to hashtag those questions, hashtag StarkvilleQS. So, Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Andy McCullough and Eno Saris for visiting us. Thanks to Tyler Kepner for the great trivia question and for the great book. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, for producing us and putting up with us all year long. And thanks to you all for listening. Next up on The Athletic Baseball Show, it is the round table, as opposed to this, which was some different kind of table. Meanwhile, Doug and I will see you in 2023.
On Starkville.